Good evening and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists.
Good morning. Good
morning.
tell them the Trump or stop on.
Welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philly. The United Lodge, what is the United Lodge of Theosophists? Well,
turn off cell phones.
Okay. Before we begin the meeting here, we would like to ask everyone to please silence your cell phones and refrain from texting during the meeting. We'll show you how to do it. Okay. So what is the United Lodge of Theosophists? We see a few new faces here. Welcome on a Sunday morning. The United Lodge of Theosophists is an association of students of theosophy, students who study and put into practice the principles of theosophy, which we regard as being found in, as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. The association is loyal to the founders of the theosophical movement and to the philosophy itself, and therefore, it being a very lofty undertaking, here in the Lodge, there's really not much time for differences of individual opinion and side issues in all of this. Rather, the mission is to hold before the public universal ideas as found in the literature. The basis for our union is not one of commitment of money or of, it's not an organization where there are specific titles as presidents and treasurers and officers. Rather, it is an association of volunteers who work together as a family. And there are elder brothers and sisters and younger brothers and sisters, and there's always opportunity to be of service if one chooses to seek out the opportunity to be of service in one way or another. And so, the Lodge regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, which happens to be the topic for today's talk, the true service of humanity, regardless of sex, religion, color, ethnic origin, or any other condition. And the Lodge welcomes to its association all who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. We hold meetings twice a week, Sundays, 11 to 12, the doors open at 10:30. Wednesdays the doors open at 5:30 and the library is open and available to the public at the front of the building from 5:30 to 7:30. Then from 7:45 to 9, we have a class, a theosophical class in the Ocean of Theosophy. That's a textbook, so to speak. It's a synthesis of the secret doctrine, the principles of the philosophy. And we are actually on the last chapter of it. We've gone through it this entire year since last September or October. And for the summer session beginning in July, we will then begin a study on the Bhagavad Gita on Wednesday evenings. All of our meetings are free and open to the public. There are no dues or fees or expectations of any kind other than the expectation that the individual places on himself. That being said, any contributions of time, money, and service are gratefully received, but there is no obligations imposed or implied. If you'd like to contribute in any way, you're certainly invited to, after the meeting, to chat with the person at the book table and find out how that can be arranged. Now, today's meeting is a panel discussion on the true service of humanity. For the month of June, the umbrella topic for the Sunday talks is practical theosophy, the search for truth, making it real. And so what is it about the true service of humanity from a theosophic perspective that makes it more real? Well, the true service of humanity, when we talk about service, you know, we can talk about the service professions where in the mundane world, there's always the give and take. And yet, we have to make a buck, we have to pay the rent, and so there's nothing wrong with that. But gee whiz, when we do it, what is the motive? And what is the ethic behind it? And are we there really? Whatever it is that we're doing, whatever it may be, are we there to render the service the best we can? If we are, that's theosophic work. That is theosophic work. In a bigger sense, service is sacrifice. Theosophically, the two words are almost synonyms, or they can be used very comfortably in the same sentence anyway. Sacrifice, when we serve in such a way as to sacrifice, the true sacrifice is not giving up my time for an hourly wage. The true sacrifice is not an even barter, but rather the one who understands the true nature of sacrifice is he is giving of himself for a higher purpose. And in the giving, if it's a selfless, dedicated motive, if it's a selfless motive, without doing so in expectation of return, but rather doing it because it's the right thing to be done, then the service rendered has far higher implications for the people that we're serving. So it's one thing to do our job for the wage. It's another thing to do our job and then some, but get the same wage. There's something more that's being given. How does this work out? Let's talk about the case of the Mahatma. Someone who's far along the spiritual path, in simple words, has made a habit of doing the things that the average man of the day doesn't like to do. The Mahatma somewhere along the way has made a habit of doing the things that the average person doesn't want to do, giving of himself in certain ways and living in accordance with the law and working with the law so that nature recognizes him as a co-creator and makes obeisance to him. As a result, he grows in certain ways that he is able to serve yet far beyond the possibilities of the average man. And the keynote to this kind of service is impersonal service. It has to be done simply because it's the right thing to do. We talk about in the Declaration, all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. For so long, people organize and stratify other people based on these types of things. And theosophically speaking, everybody we come in contact with, whether they might be perceived as, you know, an older student or not as far along the path, all of this, we all learn from everyone certain things. And we all can teach others other things. So everybody's in the soup. In that sense, if we maintain an impersonal attitude toward everybody around us, really, we are the bestower of the message that they could use. And if we see them as our brother, rather than any other category, then really we're open to whatever message is available through them to us. And that is service. So impersonality is the keynote of service to humanity. That's first. Second, whatever we're doing, do your best with the right motive. sincerely doing our duty the best we can with the right motive is theosophic work. Theosophic in the sense that we grow in character when we know we're doing the best that we can. And in, how am I doing on time?
You're doing.
Okay. Don't start throwing the shoes yet. but finally, so impersonality, do our best. And then finally is discernment of the right thing to do. So often we think, well, you know, what really is my duty? What is it that I'm supposed to accomplish in this life? How can I best serve? Well, if a person is completely devoted to the cause of theosophy, is that going to help him figure out what's best, the best way to serve? It's not. If someone is a student and devotes hours and hours to the study of theosophical philosophy, is that going to specifically guide him in the world on exactly what to do? We're told it's not. And if all someone does is philanthropic work without the wisdom behind it, is that going to help him discern the right type of service? No. All three have to be together. When the three are merged, devotion to the cause, study, observation, devotion to the cause, study, and the philosophic or the philanthropic work, exemplification of the principles of the philosophy, working it and putting it into service and seeing what the results are, we grow in certain ways and are self-guided to whatever it is that our purpose in life is in the mundane world, with the light of theosophy guiding our way. Now, we're going to move on to the second portion of this, and then questions and discussion will be had afterward.
Well, we would like to add to the idea that sacrifice and service are synonyms, but so is duty. Duty falls within that same similarness. But we come to life and we need or we want to help. There's something about life that we feel that we can be of help. We feel that in our families. We feel that with our children. And hopefully we expand that and express that in our community. But the problem that exists today, as expressed, is that we lack discrimination. What is it that I need to do? What is my duty? How can I best serve? How can I sacrifice for it to be of any value? Because we know that this material world in which we live is not permanent. It will disintegrate. It will die before our eyes, as our bodies will float back into its constituent parts, back into nature. That's the reality. So how can we serve humanity? How can we ease the suffering in the world? Well, theosophy says, by knowledge, by gaining knowledge of our true nature, our divine nature, so that the laws of this physical world, yes, they have sway over us, but we are not aware of that greater law that has ultimate sway over us, of our eternal nature. that we are in essence boundless, immutable, and omnipresent beings that are humbled by our own karma, by the effects that come to us as we see in this life. We are unable to express these great desires that we have because we are thwarted. We are in need of knowledge. Well, Theosophy holds before us that knowledge. And it is for each to come drink of this well. It's said that Theosophy is only for those who want it. But let me remind us all that even though the others do not want it, they need it. It needs to be put out into the world. Because our understanding of karma alone can embrace the life of someone and take the bitterness from their heart. That there is hope. There is possibility. That things are as they are because of how we have been. So, what does that mean? That we can create a brotherhood of humanity. We can create every possibility which we can imagine if we but dare. That Theosophy gives us the foundation on which we can base our ideas, our thoughts, our deeds, our actions, our words, that will build a new temple in the sky, a new land of love and prosperity, but not of the material world, but that of our spiritual nature. So, to be of service, to do our duty, we must promulgate these ideas that we find in Theosophy of our true nature, that we are soul beings in evolution, that the experiences of life will pass away, but within our nature, we hold fast to what we have learned. And our soul journeys on. We are that eternal pilgrim. To aid those who are suffering, we need to give them the food of truth, of absolute truths, not of relative truths, but of absolute truths. Karma and reincarnation is the gift that we can give those whom we love. Mr. Judge says 500 good workers for this cause will transform the world. 500 working on the same basis with the same motive. That we as Theosophists, we should love one another as co-workers and fellow students with one aim, to bring into reality the fact that we are souls. We are not these bodies. We are souls. And that everything that comes to us is of our own making. So make different. You know, we come, we volunteer, we come up here and we say these words, and we sometimes say we fall short. But by saying them again and again, we realize that there's more that we can do. That where we have fallen short, we can put forth more effort. And we recognize that our perfection is not now, but is only to be realized. We were told when we first came to these rooms that, listen, you may not get an opportunity to speak or to ask a question But if you come prepared and you have studied and you have considered the ideas to be talked about that day, by sitting quietly and lifting our minds up to that ideal, those masters, those perfected beings, while you sit there quietly listening, you're putting forth the right ideas, right intentions, that we are powerful beings and our thoughts are shared with each other. We may not be cognizant of them, but what you are thinking affects everyone. If you see no hope, that affects everyone. Theosophy gives us hope. There is hope. There's a story that we read from the mundane world, not the theosophical world, but it adds to the experiences of life, that there were these two brothers in Italy, Mario and Ancilla. And Mario wanted to be a great preacher, great oratory. He wanted to mesmerize or fascinate everyone by his oratory. And his friends Ancilio said, "I will pray for you." Well, as they grew up, Mario became a preacher. And he went to the monastery, and his friend Ancilio went along. But he just swept the floors and kept the place clean and organized. And the first day that Mario came up on the pulpit, he looked out in the audience, and there was his friend Ancilio sitting in the front by the pillar. He was inspired. And he gave a great sermon, a great speech. And many, many others after that. But behold, one day he came to church. And he looked about, and he didn't see his friend Ancilio. And a friend whispered, "Oh, he died just shortly ago." Well, Mario gave his sermon, but it was lacking, it lacked something. He did not feel empowered and impassioned. Something was missing. And he said, "Well, I'll practice and I'll study more so that I have more zeal and there's more enthusiasm." But his next sermon was no different because his friend Ancilio was not there. So he went and spoke to one of his brothers and said, what's happened? "Did Ancilio ever say anything to you?" He says, "Yes." He said he prayed every day. He prayed for good intention. For good intention? And Mario thought, this can't be. But he went on and he just could no longer regain his zest and his zeal. He came to understand that it was through the force of his brother, through his intention, through his aid, through his sitting there quietly, concentrating upon that which was to be discussed, putting his effort silently forward, that he was of great benefit. So Mario said to himself, "No, it is not great oratory I wish for now. I wish for humility." So we open up our morning to questions of service, duty, and sacrifice.
Yes.
We've often heard in these rooms that compassion is the law of laws. What light does that shine on the idea of service and duty?
Well, compassion is the highest form or highest desire. Buddha expressed that in his teachings and his ideas. Compassion sheds all the light. That if we do not love one another, we have no patience, we are critical, we find fault, we are of no help. Let the law move on. Don't point out the things that are wrong. Move forward and nourish those things that are right. Bring our attention to that which will bring hope, not that which drags us down. For we all are imperfect. We need to have compassion for the weaknesses of others and for ourselves.
Yes?
Earlier it was mentioned about being impersonal in our service. Well, some of us are not at that point yet. I can't be impersonal. But what I can do is see in another something that reminds me of someone I already love, so I can treat them. For example, you know, Uncle Henry is a grump, but I love Uncle Henry. Now I'm dealing with this person who is a grump. I can see Uncle Henry there and therefore treat them differently. So there are steps to impersonality, and we can use the ones we already love to make them.
There are steps to impersonality, and yeah, the example was very helpful. Thank you. Everything occurs in, goes on in degrees. You know, impersonality is another word we could use in the, if we extract it, extrapolate it philosophically, is universe and a universal attitude, a selfless attitude. But we know that before you become a selfless being of light incarnate in the world, you've got to move from selfish to unselfish. And it takes effort to do that. And it takes self-knowledge. How are we going to realize whether or not we are acting selflessly or selfishly or unselfishly? Observe yourself. But self-knowledge is of loving deeds the child. She's saying, do it. Get out there. Watch yourself. And we grow step by step in our ever-increasing impersonal sphere of service. Yes?
One second. Sure. To add to that, you know, to rise above our nature, the practice is of ethics and metaphysics. Metaphysics rises above that reasoning and analytical mind that we have, and it gives us a broader perspective and will take us from that impersonal to that impersonal. That through a consideration of metaphysics, of space, of reincarnation, of karma, of the greater laws of life, we will be able to look down upon our personal nature. But we have to broaden our mind to see that which is holding us back, but our mind itself.
Yes.
I think on some level I must be a very deeply selfish person, because I need to put everything in a perspective that I believe being selfish can be of service. Like, for example, you know, in terms of sacrifice, I don't believe that I need to think of anything in terms of sacrifice. I believe giving can be selfish. I believe if I give something, you know, from myself, that not only am I clearing out space to allow grace to come in, but, you know, there's something about, you know, the act of giving that cleanses me, that makes me more capable to kind of, you know, understand the real truths. So they talk about how, I think Jesus said something about, you know, you don't even know that you have something until you actually give it away, because then you can actually kind of visualize it and experience it through the act of giving it. So I don't know if that makes any sense, but for me that's really helpful to kind of, you know, I think that this is a selfish path. I think that it is that, you know, to think of things as being selfless, something we're not capable of doing that. I think that you can still selfishly give, if that makes any sense.
Oh, we can selfishly give. If the purpose for our giving is to get something in return, you know, that's not impersonal service. And it's not unreasonable to look at ourselves and be honest with ourselves and say there's a whole lot of selfish stuff about me. But there's a whole lot of people who don't even have that level of insight. Give anyway. You know, and as was said, self-knowledge is of loving deeds the child. What's behind it is the motive, you know, and it sounds like the contribution here is coming from perhaps one who's really checking, questioning motive, and that's not a reason not to give. I mean, if the giving is going to help someone else anyway, if we benefit from it, so be it. But it's all, like was said earlier, it steps along a path, you know. Compassion has to be used in the home as well as with others. You know, don't judge yourself for recognizing an imperfection. You know, rather rejoice in it, that it's recognized. And contributions here.
One second. Motive and attitude are the basis for everything. And Buddha says that we suffer because we are attached. So this is our journey. I cannot tell anyone here what to do. We each have to figure it out for ourselves of what it is that we need to do to free ourselves from all these restraints that bind us back. All these fears, these anxieties, these desires that accomplish nothing in our life. They're just, what do we do when we have a free moment? We have nothing to do. Where does our mind go? Well, it should go back to a universal idea, theosophy. And we say that in a sense that this is our lifeline to reality. That the more we saturate our thoughts with these ideas, the sooner we will free ourselves from these attachments which bind us back. And it is, the journey is to free ourselves from karma so that we can be self-realized. But to do that, we have to free ourselves from attachment. So yes, we see ourselves in a certain way, but that doesn't mean that's who we are. That's just where we are. It doesn't mean that's who we are. And we have to come to a realization who we are or what we are in our true nature. And as we journey forward, we will take it up in our next life or another life, these same ideas, because these ideas are universal. They are eternal, so that death does not separate us from these ideas.
Yes, in the back.
We remember, as the speakers were speaking this morning, we remembered being a young person and hearing from our parents the phrase, offer it up. There was some situation that came to us where we had a duty to do that was going to cause us some kind of suffering. So we keyed onto that, and we remember so often hearing, just offer it up. And in a sense, although it was not specific where or whom I was offering it to, it allows one to separate, as was said, from the attachment to the event. And also, if it's lifted up in some sense, it's made sacred, which is sacrifice. So as was said, it's the motive, it's the intention, it's the feeling towards it. Offer it up, release from it, and just do it because it's the right thing to do.
Thank you. Which is sacrifice and transmutation, yes?
I just wanted to say, there is selfish and there is selfish. Universal law is always in effect. We don't know what we're doing usually in using it. But if I do something, I am going to get the natural result of my motive and my intention. If my intention is to help in any way, whether it's physical or emotional, financial, whatever it is, if my motive is clear, selfishly, that law gives me a reward, we might say. Now, there are those thinkers, we discussed this in the Bhagavad Gita, who believe in a certain doctrine that because it might be selfish, do nothing. Then you can never be accused of being selfish. However, that's a very difficult road to spiritual evolution. The other selfish is, I am doing this because it's going to do something good for me. So the whole thing comes back to motive and has nothing to do with what we call selfish.
So there is selfish, and then there is selfish, and there's different ways to look at it. When we talk about this path of service, that's the path that's followed in the teachings of the Voice of the Silence, as recorded in the writings of HPV. But there's another path. This is the path of renunciation, the path of service. When for life and lifetimes, we make the habit, as we said, Mahatmas make the habit of doing things that the average man of today doesn't like to do. The path of service leads one ultimately to what? To nirvana, and to turning his back on nirvana. Because if he accepts nirvana, what's going to happen? Not much. He's not going to be able to continue to be of service to the rest of us. There's another path of liberation, which I'm going to do what I'm going to do to perfect myself to reach nirvana. And as long as I follow a certain path, and we're not sure exactly how it works, but it does, we are told, that as long as what I'm doing to self-evolve toward nirvana, as long as what I'm doing is not hurting others and following the law of self-evolution, I will evolve to the level where I will reach nirvana and be done with it, which is a selfish path. But who are we to accuse someone else? The teachings of Theosophy teach the path of renunciation, the renunciation of nirvana in the interest of service to all of humanity. So there's selfishness and then there's selfishness. Justin, no? Yeah.
But, you know, we were just thinking, before the Bell telephone,
we're thinking about a Bell telephone?
Before the Bell telephone.
Well, we can't remember that. Do you remember that?
With the pyramids?
Before the pyramids, too?
These little boxes we carry around in our pockets. We would have to communicate by writing a letter. And we would receive mail from many sources. And if you received a letter from the governor of Pennsylvania, often it would be signed, "Your humble servant, so-and-so, governor of Pennsylvania." When we write to friends and receive mail, whether it be our parents or our companions, they would write, "Love," or "Sincerely, yours truly." We don't get letters like that anymore, but I brought the subject up. What did they mean, "Your humble servant"? What did they mean, "Yours truly, and with love, and at your service"?
Well, we would think they expressed something that we are lacking today. You know, "Your humble servant." It's service to humanity. It is, to whatever degree that it is performed, if the intent and the motive is to help others and to be of service, we are sacrificing it up to that which is better, that which is best. That we can only do the best that we can do. To someone else's viewpoint, that wasn't very good. But we don't measure life by our success. It's by our effort, by our motive. Those are the things which make something true.
That there's a great guru inside of ourselves, the center of truth. And if we pay attention to that, then we will know what is service in the name of service and what is service in the name of our selfish desires. We're helped by the fact that we have a great watcher inside, self-observing self, so that if we keep watching ourselves and apply this intuitive knowledge, the sense of truth, which isn't always easy, we have a rule that leads us down the bed. I think that there's too much injunction in our society against self-inspection, introspection. Our scientific world says we should be objective, which is now not only silly, but also being proven to be so limiting we don't see the larger mind. So I'm saying word for knowledge, but self-knowledge, by using the, being self-inspected, which takes a lot of courage sometimes, and recognizing the guru inside, who is this center of truth, this intuitive center, which says that we're lying to ourselves, or that it's true.
Thank you for the contribution.
It's quite interesting, because Buddhism talks about that Buddha that sits in your heart. And I think it's the expression that you have just made, that is the witness to all the change. And it becomes our voice of conscience when we cultivate it. And we see the truth that we hear from it. And we check, test, and verify those truths against the so-called realities of life. And that becomes our guide. And no better guide could we hope for.
Yes.
I'm not a Buddha yet, and so for me, I believe that there's a lesson in every stage of development. So I think one of the great sages of our time, Jack Johnson, a musician, says that, you know, we move on before we understand. So in some way, I don't think that you could jump ahead six levels to try to say, well, I'm going to be selfless. I think that I'm the way that I am for a reason, and there's lessons to be learned at this stage, and I just need to be comfortable with that. I don't know the answers. I'm just saying what's kind of in my heart, and I just know that, I mean, I'm not at the point where I can selflessly just kind of act. I think that there's meaning and lessons in where I'm at right now.
The implication there is that people sit up in these meetings and say, this is how we should act, and that's the spiritual way to do it. Actually, the purpose in so many ways for these meetings is, you know, if we look at just the objects of the theosophical movement, which is what? Formation of the universal, a nucleus of universal brotherhood. Second is the study of the religions and sciences and philosophies, ancient and modern. And the third is the study of the inner laws of nature and in man. Perhaps the third applies in certain ways to this, because when we consider the inner nature of the human being, you can't just make a decision to grow that inner nature. You can make the decision to take the steps in that direction based on direction that's pointed out by someone or something that you trust, the something being the teachings, if you've proven to yourself that they're true, or a person who lives the example, who you recognize some level of real character development and follow a path to. But there's no one who's saying, do this now. Rather, it's always a step by step. But the investigation of the inner man, even though sometimes it might just seem academic, it's really not. what it does is it clears the true ideas clear our mind, so that when we recognize growth, or when growth is present, we start to recognize it for what it is. And we got to clear the false ideas out of our minds. So the purpose here is to present the ideas, and how they take root is, of course, an individual experience, and what we do with them is an individual experience. We're not told how to live our lives by anybody in this lodge, but we are taught the principles. Yes.
One second.
Oh, go ahead.
What? No, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
This one, I think, so this is a working in process to be appreciative. Because a lot
to
of
be
times,
a what?
To be appreciative.
Okay.
Because a lot of times, because I have a good job, and, you know, basically I have anything I want. If I want to, you know, buy a car, get a house, you know. And the question is, you know, I actually living in my own comfort bubble. And sometimes I don't feel this need to step out our comfort zone to sacrifice our comfort level to do the things we normally wouldn't do. And plus, you know, we have our routine, you know, we get up in the morning, we go work and we come back, and that kind of, you know, routine, you know, sometimes I find that it's very difficult to step out that routine, doing something else. And the question is, like, why do I care if I, you know, go up there to volunteer my hour, or what is motivation for that? And a lot of times I see that because, you know, since I can get anything I want, and so a lot of times I kind of don't know how to appreciate the things I have, the friends I have. And then I ask myself a question. And because that kind of lifestyle kind of leads them, we don't know what's, you know, we don't, in a sense that we don't care what happens in the future. And then I thought about, you know, should I be that kind of person, or should I, you know, see that our future pretty much is a hope-oriented society. And then hope actually gives happiness. So for me, at least from my own experiences of volunteering in my community, I actually learned how to appreciate people, because in my normal situation, I wouldn't talk to the people who I don't want to talk to because I volunteered. And in a way that you have to, because, you know, you go out there, that's, you know, you might as well make use of your time. Then you kind of try to get to know them, and you open your comfort, you know, open, expose your vulnerability in a way, in some level. Then, you know, then you have to, you know, talk to them, and in a way you appreciate, you know, that is part of your experiences. In return, I'm not saying that it, you know, it's selfish or anything else. I think it makes me appreciate the things I want, appreciate the things I have. The family usually I take granted, and I just become easily to accept who they are. In return, I accept who I am as an individual, as a defined character of who I am.
Thank you.
Well, there's a expression in this philosophy of gratitude.
Right.
Okay? Now, the gratitude that we need to cultivate in ourselves is the gratitude to those masters, those perfected beings who have expressed this philosophy, these truths. They have kept them alive in the world. So that feeling of gratitude to being able to share these treasures for ourselves, we feel that gratitude to be expressed to the world in general. So we see on the outward plane in the world in which we live, service, we want to help. Theosophy is saying that this grand feeling, this gratitude that wells up within us, if we base it upon the real, the everlasting, it is in ideas. The ideas that we cultivate can change the world. We change because we see it in ourselves. We cultivate these ideas that we hear expressed over and over again. We try to put them in practice. We try to assimilate them and try to make ourselves better able to help and teach others. So, yes, gratitude is probably the motivating desire that makes us want to help each other because we are grateful for what we have. Down in the corner over here.
Yes.
I was thinking when I first heard the word service, the most purest form for me of service that I could give to a person, and that's my attention, to actually listen to a person without judgment, you know, trying to understand a person. You know. I want them just to understand for my fulfillment. And you're talking about the sacrifice, and you also said something about attachment. You know, companionship without, if you're not attached, you have nothing but sacrifice. Because sacrifice is for the physical. I don't see where sacrifice has a place in the truly spiritual. What is there to sacrifice?
Well, okay, so on the one hand, the contribution has to do with some of the great service that one can do is listen to people. And the other side of the comment was, but you can only sacrifice something physical. So what does that have to do with the spiritual? Well, when we take our time and give our attention to someone who needs to be heard, and probably who we need to hear in some way, isn't that a sacrifice? It's a sacrifice of our time. It's a sacrifice, perhaps, of our ego to close our mouths and realize our opinion doesn't count right now, and the outcome of this interaction is going to be of benefit to this other individual. So that is certainly not a sacrifice of something physical, but we're giving something up. On the other hand, literally, sacrifice in its highest sense is what is the raising of the self by the self, sacrificing our personal stuff of this world, of our desires, of our needs, raising the self by the self through what? Through inner work. It's said that the experiences in life is the substance of our character. And the degree to which we grow in character is related directly to what we're willing to sacrifice to it. Was there a hand?
Well,
in the back?
Just can I add one thing before? Theosophy offers up the great sacrifice, the Bhagavad Gita. Read the Bhagavad Gita. It's a constant reminder of the path on which we walk. That we need to be single-minded. That means we need to be living in the moment. We need to give up the fruits of our actions, but give it up to what? The highest of which we can comprehend. That means to everyone, because we are all one. The words that are found in the Gita, our brain reads them. But there's this subtle message, this intuitive message that is read there, that the brain often doesn't register, but the heart does. And the more we read it, the more our heart opens like the lotus blossom to the sunshine of our own life. But our actions are given up to the greater good of humanity. That is the great sacrifice.
In the back corner with the blue?
Yes. We promulgate theosophical teachings by studying and otherwise. There's always study, because we really need to study the philosophy, because it runs counter to so much of the indoctrination that we've had toward, you know, personal success. And but the otherwise is interesting, because we've had friends say, well, what does the United Lodge of Theosophists do? Are they involved in, we'll just say, you know, any specific worthy causes, what are deemed as worthy causes without even naming them. But the thing is there is that sometimes these, what one considers a worthy cause is actually polarizing to someone else. And it's all inclusive, and service is left to each individual to perform, and to perform as quietly as possible without drawing attention to oneself. There are other theosophical organizations that have taken a stand in certain areas for certain causes, but inevitably it really doesn't do much good. It does more harm than good. So we don't proselytize, but we promulgate. We want to put the message out there. And the message is, it's duty, it's service, it's love, it's selfless sacrifice, but it's whatever causes that each individual believes in. As a group, you know, our cause is to get these ideas out, because they are sorely needed in today's world. That's our cause.
The cause of the lodge, the purpose of the lodge, is to present the principles, and it's for the individuals to put those principles into action as they deem fit.
And the fact that we promulgate only points out to us that which we are lacking, where our understanding falls short. Because promulgation without practice and assimilation is for naught. So if we do not practice what we preach, we are not gaining anything from it.
Yes, in the back, please.
Just a reminder of what an earlier student reminded us of, that the word sacrifice comes from to make sacred. So anytime you sacrifice anything of yourself, your opinion, your feeling, your physical time, you are making something sacred. But back to the earlier point, I am not a Buddha yet. Well, what do we have then? We have an ideal of some kind to which we aspire. We may do it from childhood on. Let's say we wanted to be a doctor. You can't be a doctor without having the ideal of medicine, and then the respect and looking up to your teachers, and perhaps one or two examples of, I want to be a doctor like that one. So what we are not yet, we hold up in front of us as an ideal, and that is exactly what Theosophy says. The highest ideal would be the Buddha, but there are so many steps in between, and there are people that we can see and interact with that can help us to become like they are and even go past them.
Thank you.
So that goes back to the very idea that there is no good and there is no bad. There just is what is. And we color it by our own feelings, our own desires, our own wishes. But there is no good and bad. There's just opportunity. Opportunity, opportunity, opportunity. And whether we take it or not becomes our karma.
Last question.
In the previous comment, the ideal becomes possible to us because evolution is a fact that we can prove. So if perfectibility, that highest, is attainable, because we have examples of those who have attained it, we are no different than they, except where we are along our journey. So that ideal should be the piece of hope we keep in our back pocket at all times.
Well, we have come to our end of our hour. We'd like to remind everyone that all the activities of this lodge are carried on through voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. And all are welcome to participate, but there is no obligation implied or inferred. We do as we think best. Meeting adjourned.